thanks for joining us on Back on Air, the podcast for operators who have compliance on their mind and road transport at the heart of their business. This podcast is a recording of our live fortnightly webinar held every other Friday. So if you like what you hear and fancy joining the live event where you can ask questions and vote on our interactive polls, just register through the link in the show notes. The content of this podcast is correct at the time of broadcasting, but it isn't meant to be specific legal advice. If, however, you need advice, we recommend that you take proper legal advice for your individual situation. Finally, please do leave us a review, and of course, details of any areas you would like us to cover in future episodes. We do read them, and it helps others find our podcast. Enjoy!
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you very much for joining us this Friday lunchtime. Well, it's officially Black Friday today, but in Backhouse Jones, we call it Back Friday. And if you're interested, we've got some really great deals with our training on Back Friday for some courses in January. So missing mileage and brake testing are there to put those offers for. Before I hand across to the team, who I know are raring to go, just a few reminders about the webinar. We love your interaction. So as always, in the right-hand corner, there's the control panel. If you just weave any questions or observations that you have into there, I will then weave the question in at the appropriate time to Jonathan. Joe Dawson-Gerard, our money-saving expert and political correspondent, is on today. And I think Joe is very eager to hear some views that you might have. So if you familiarise yourself with that section of the webinar, that would be great. Okay, Jonathan, I'll hand across to you.
Well, you need to start the slides, though. Otherwise, it's our big faces on the screen and nobody wants to see me that closer.
Oh, have we no slides?
No slides.
Oh dear, where's Chloe?
Yeah, I know, Chloe's only in the other room as well. Chloe. No, still no, so there we go. Now we're getting started. Well, good afternoon, everybody. A nice smooth start there, as usual, with the voice. Introducing the whole show, however, a slide failure.
I don't know what's gone wrong.
Okay, so we've got a number of things to talk about today. But obviously the really big thing that's really worrying everybody in a small or medium-sized business is tax and the budgets. I don't think it was necessarily a budget we all wanted, and I don't think it's necessarily the tax regime we all wanted. But to help talk us through it and find solutions or observations, we've got the erstwhile Joe, who's probably never done so much budget work as in the last 3 years, but who is now our resident budget expert. So over to you, Joe. What are we going to do?
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Jonathan. So basically, I'm a week late. I appreciate that budget, but we thought you'd still want to hear a little bit about our thoughts in respect of it anyway. And I'd like to get some of your thoughts on it too. First of all, can I ask anyone who is a company director who might pay themselves by dividend, pop a message in the box, please. Good to get a feel for what our audience is like. So starting off then, what's the background to this autumn statement this time? Well, we have inflation has gone above 11%, I believe. If anyone actually knows the precise figure, please tell me, because it keeps changing. I think we're technically in a recession and business investment has gone down. The estimated hole in the public finances is about 50 billion. And unfortunately for the UK, growth is not above pre-pandemic levels yet. However, one glimmer of hope, the Bank of England Monetary Policy Report forecast is forecasting that inflation will be dropping rapidly through 2023 to 2024. Whether or not that's the case, I'm not so sure. I think if we took a straw poll in here, we'd probably say, what do we think?
Well, it's all about the Ukraine war, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if the Ukraine war ends, yes, ultimately there will be a significant drop in inflation. But if the UK war keeps going, then I think we'll still see prices rising.
I tend to agree with you. So that's the backdrop for the autumn statement. And very quickly, I want therefore to summarise what the key points were. And then what I'll do is I'll move on to talk about three sections, the taxes and reliefs of businesses, points particularly for the transport sector, and then I'll look at wage and payroll issues. So
I can tell you, Joe, you are already getting comments in, people saying, yes, I'm a director, pay by dividends.
Right, a few already, brilliant. So the aim was to restore stability to the UK government finances. That was seen as Mr. Sunak's priority. And how has he done that, or how is he proposing to do that? And I'm not saying it's going to work, but this is what they're telling us. Freezes and below inflation growth in government spending. Tax rises to increase tax increase, and that has been done through fiscal drag. Anyone know what fiscal drag is? Pop it in the box and we'll pick up with it later. Basically, you'll have heard this phrase, stealth taxes, and we'll talk about those shortly. Life support spending to avert energy cost crises, and growth limited to legal reform and low-cost infrastructure changes until the recession ends, so not loads of money being ploughed into infrastructure at the moment. An interesting comment was that there's a distinct lack of what we call supply side reforms in this autumn statement, which surprised some commentators. So moving on to the first section, which is business taxes and reliefs. The first point, which is not going to surprise anyone, is that the corporation tax increase is back in place. So this means that the main rate will increase from 19% that we've already enjoyed up to 25% from April 23. That's companies taxable profits above 250. For those below, the rate's different. So I think it's below 50,000, it's 19%. If you're in between those, there's a main rate reduced by marginal relief. And I'm not going to go on to too much about that, but basically, compared to the current flat rate, this is pretty complicated and it's a significant increase in costs for business. So disappointing, I'd say. And I know Jonathan has had quite a debate with me just now about it. He feels the same.
Well, if you think we're competing with Ireland, where I think the rate is 16%.
I think you're right. Makes us pretty uncompetitive, doesn't it? So that threshold, basically that's being frozen at £85,000. That's the stage at which you have to register for VAT. And that's going to be until March 2026. It's been at that rate, I understand, since around 2017, and it's twice as high as VAT in the EU and other OECD averages. So what that means is basically businesses more and more will be dragged into that bracket and need to register for VAT. So if you're a smaller business and you're that threshold is not being increased, so you just need to keep an eye on it because you may fall under the VAT regime, which has certain other things and obligations you need to do. There's a new VAT penalty scheme coming in, very specialist this. I suspect most people listening will get their accountants to deal with it, but you just need to be aware of that. Right, I was asking about directors and how you pay yourselves, because the government is making other allowances less generous for certain businesses. I think this kind of thing will particularly hit SMEs. I think the budget's been quite, I'm not going to be too opinionated here, but quite hard on small, medium enterprises. So if you run a limited company, you may, for example, pay yourself by dividends, and also business owners may need to pay capital gains tax when you sell business assets like land and machinery and things. So what you do is you get an annual allowance for both of these taxes, which is an amount you can make without paying the tax. In the statement, the Chancellor has slashed these allowances, I'm afraid. So by 2024 to 25, they're going to be significantly less. So if you pay yourself by dividends, you'll know you can take out £2,000 now without paying any tax on it initially. That's going to go down to £1,000 and then eventually down to £500 by 2024 to 25. The capital gains allowance will also similarly be cut from £12,300 to £6,000, eventually dropping down to £3,000 by 24-25. So the annual exempt amount reduction will increase the tax payable on the sale of businesses. So potentially this, the impact of this, is reducing the UK's attractiveness to as a place to invest and start a business. So pretty disappointing here. If you are one of the directors paying yourself this way, I'd say speak to your director, get him to run a model, because the balance is now tipping between whether you continue to pay yourself this way or whether you go back to paying yourself more salary. And it will vary for different businesses, but now's the time to start looking at that. energy support. So from 2023, the energy price guarantee is going to continue for a further 12 months at the level of $3,000 a year for households. But for non-domestic customers, businesses, the energy bill relief scheme, as it's known, that's going to be reviewed. So we have no more news on that. He's told us it's going to be significantly lower, the support, and more targeted. So obviously we just have to wait and see. Again, another blow to SMEs. I do know SMEs aren't the only people we have on the audience. We have a lot of large businesses listening in too, but it is interesting to note. Research and development tax relief cut. Again, I'm not very specialist this. If this is something your business uses, speak to your accountant. But in broad terms, there's two systems, one for large companies, one for small and medium companies. The rates are going to, for the small and medium companies, are decreasing. Again, another blow. But the rate for the larger companies, it's known as RDEC, which you may have heard your accountant talk about, is going to increase. So that's good for them. But again, speak to your accountant. And then we finally, on the business section, we all heard about windfall taxes. I don't think we have anyone listening who's in oil, gas or electricity sector. But basically, there are going to be fairly sturdy levies, 35% for oil and gas and 45% for electricity producers, again, to raise revenue. So unless anyone's got any questions on the business tax section.
Just to put in the energy, Joe, one of our listeners says that apparently the RHA have asked all truck, coach and van members to provide details of their energy cost increases.
Right, that's interesting. That will be really useful information to collate so we can really see the impact. So,
and fiscal drag, do you want to go back to this? So we've had two people with definitions, one saying failing to raise caps and thresholds to allow for inflation.
Pretty much that's it,
yeah. So someone has delayed decisions on tax and spend until a later date.
Exactly. So it's dragging everybody into the next bracket without raising their taxes, and the actual implication is those people end up paying more tax, but you don't get your tax has been raised from 40% to 41%, for example. It sounds better, but the Treasury will get more tax out of us. Okay, so moving on to fuel duty. Anyone aware of what was said in the budget about fuel duty? See if you have any...
Nothing official, was it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Absolutely nothing. So, but you will have read in the press, however, lots of chat about a 23% potential rise in the future. Now, I just wanted to clarify this. So basically, there wasn't mention in the budget about it on Thursday, but it has been suggested there could be a 23% rise in fuel duty next March. And this has not come from the Treasury. It has come from what we call the OBR, the Office Budget for Responsibility, who is, remember, it's the body that checks the Treasury's homework, financial homework. So the Treasury had been asked to comment on this, and basically what they said was this was a provisional figure based on forecasts that's subject to change, and the existing 5p cut to fuel duty will remain in place, I'm reading wrote here, until March 2023. Okay, and they're saying that's worth 2.4 billion. If a increase as suggested by the OBR goes ahead, that could mean up to 12p a litre going on pump prices, which is quite a significant increase. But what we need to do is, the Treasury have said we've got to wait until the spring budget and they will make a decision. Now, I'm hoping that this is going to be jumped on, and tactically it's been leaked for a reason, or the OBR has put it in there for a reason. I know that the RHA and other people have been putting out releases about it. Actually, you know, I've read lots of things that people aren't happy about it. So let's see if we can put a bit of pressure on, maybe.
Aren't they also discussing taxing EVs now with road tax?
They are discussing taxing EVs, which I will get onto in a second. Let me have a look now. Just bear with me. So what they're going to do is they're going to extend vehicle excise duty to EVs from 2025. Now, lots of commentators, and I agree with this approach, are saying that that's pretty short-sighted. We were hoping that excise duty, they'd say, you know, that would be...
Well, they are still using the road network, aren't they, I suppose?
Yes, I suppose, and that's the counter-argument, isn't it? So the impact of that is also going to be it's going to cost more for employers who provide fleets to provide those vehicles. They are, however, going to extend the allowance, capital allowance for the charging points for another year to 2025, I think. And it does still make it fairly tax efficient for employees to take electric vehicles as a salary sacrifice. So if that's something in your business you offer or we're thinking about, don't write it off just yet. Still look at it. It is still something worth looking at. Right. So going back to where I was, sorry, everybody, bear with me.
Import tariffs.
Earlier this year, I understand that the government were, they did a, what's it called when you ask for opinions on things?
Consultation.
A consultation, exactly, on from businesses as regards how import tariffs were affecting their businesses and whether there were any particular things they imported that it would be useful to remove those tariffs on. I think they ended up with a list of 200 things and the budget has come, the autumn statement has announced that 100 of those are going to be zero rated. So it was a really useful exercise. I have in the handout section put a list of what those are and how you do actually have to do something to claim the duty back on these. So speak to your accountant about it. If you have items that you would like to be considered for the next list, they are going to do a further consultation in 2023. So do speak to your accountant because that is actually quite a large potential saving for businesses. The Treasury say they're doing it to help businesses become more competitive and I tend to agree. I think that's a great thing to do. So business rates now. So you'll have heard that they're going to update the rates. Again, they're just trying to get money in, basically. The last valuation was quite a while ago, 2017. But they are putting a support package in to support this. They're freezing some multipliers. They are doing, there's a transitional relief scheme. But what's of particular interest for our some of our listeners is the retail, hospitality and leisure rates relief will be increased from 50% to 75%. That's going to be up to £110,000 per business in 2023-24. Now, I know we have a swathe of listeners who couldn't get into this sector, certainly during COVID, but there are also a big group of our listeners who are in this sector. So that's good news for you. If your business loses its eligibility for small business rates relief as a result of the revaluations I've just mentioned, the bill increases are going to be capped at £600 per year from April 2023. So they are hoping that that will ease the burden a bit. There is a fact sheet if you Google it or if you email me if you want to know more information about that. Anyone hear about the online sales tax? I actually didn't hear about this, but that's been scrapped. So that's good. That's another thing that came out. Technical tax here. I won't spend ages talking about it, but I remember quite a few webinars ago, I talked about the super deduction. Basically, that ends in March 2023, but they are keeping on the annual investment allowance of £1 million. That's going to be made permanent. So if you have been that was originally going to revert back to 200,000. If you have been incurring any capital expenditure or want to incur or planning to refer any capital expenditure, speak to your accountant sooner than later. He or she will have discussed this with you already, I hope. And if they haven't, go and see another accountant. Investment zones, we talked a lot about those when I talked about, was it the mini budget or the one before? I think it was Liz Truss's mini budget. This current Chancellor has distanced himself from that. He didn't mention them in great detail in this budget, which we thought he would. However, he has said they are going to change the focus of them and leveraging research strengths and building clusters for new growth industries. I don't think they're going to be as promising as we had originally been told, but watch this space. Leveling up infrastructure, as I mentioned at the beginning, they are not going to be spending as much as had been hoped, but they're not going to cut the capital budgets for the next 2 years. HS2 will be kept alongside the core Northern Powerhouse, rail and new hospitals, apparently. Let's see what actually happens. Apparently, Hunt said there was going to be £6 billion investment over the next 5 years. And there will be more to encourage devolution deals in England to boost levelling up. But again, no specific detail. I'm thinking the spring budget is going to be quite biggie. Right, moving on now, because I'm conscious I'm talking a lot. Wages and payroll, last section now from me. I tried to give this part of the webinar to James, but he gave me short shrift. The first part, again, fiscal drag, again, income tax changes. The personal allowance levels, that's the point at which you start paying tax, is going to be frozen to 12,570, which is where it's at till 2026. The other bands, with the exception of the 45 rate, which has been discussed, are staying the same. Again, that means it drags more people as their wages increase, which is what's happening as inflation rises, into the higher bands, thereby allowing the Treasury to recoup more tax without telling people they're getting a tax increase. You've probably heard about that ad nauseum, so I'm going to leave that where it is. The living wage and national and minimum wage, those have increased. Now, I'm not going to go through all the rates, but we're talking about the top national living wage is up to £10.42 per hour. All I want to say about this is, it's great for the lower paid workers, less great for the businesses, but you just need to be super careful. And James is here if anyone wants to ask any questions, because you can inadvertently commit an offence under the legislation relating to this. And the fines aren't great, and there's naming and shaming going on. So if that's something you want to chat through, our whole team, employment team, are really good in this area, and it's well worth looking at, particularly now the rates have changed. All sorts of weird things I had no idea, which can inadvertently mean you're committing an offence. For example, if you cut someone's break, so technically you're not paying them for 5 minutes here or there, you could be reducing their hourly rate, and all sorts. James has got quite a few horror stories to tell. National insurance threshold, the NIC thresholds and classroom rates are going to be frozen again. This is also applying to the upper earnings rate, which is a real surprise. And I wonder if that will stay in place till 2028, or if Mr. Hunt will look at that again in this spring budget. What else can I talk about? The employees NI contributions threshold is also frozen. The current rate of £9,100 a year, and also the rate at which you start paying NIC is frozen at £5,000. Not great for businesses, because we like that to go up, so you don't have such a high cost before you have to start paying your employer NIC, but it is where it is, I'm afraid. For the employment allowance, I mean, sorry. Vehicle excise duty on electric vehicles we talked about. And there's nothing been mentioned on IR35 this time. James talked about that in detail before. So I am now going to stop waffling. And thank you so much for your comments. If you've got any questions, let me know.
Just on IR35, yeah. I thought I'd understood that they were going to scrap IR35.
So now that's changed, no longer scrapping IR35. It's going to stay as it is. And so status quo remains. So if you have those type of relationships where you are engaging with personal service companies, whether that's drivers or any other staff, you need to be looking and assessing that relationship to make sure that you don't fall foul of the rules, because the penalties from April this year have been at their full rate, so there's no longer a reduction given due to the introduction. So after 12 months, those penalties are now at their height, which are 30% if you're careless about the status of the individual, 70% if you if you know and choose not to do anything, and 100% of the unpaid tax if you actually try to conceal, which is potentially tax evasion, which brings in all sorts of corporate criminal penalties effectively that you need to be careful of.
Yeah, fair enough. So still there, still very much in play, and in any event, in the transport sector, drivers should not be self-employed. There's all sorts of discussions on that topic in any event, because of the traffic commissioners stance on the status of a driver. Now, if somebody wants to take that to the Supreme Court, we'd be happy to take it for them. But otherwise, don't use self-employed drivers. And if you are using self-employed drivers, or you think you've got a justification for a self-employed driver, talk to us at length about it. Don't just assume that that's going to be okay, because the starting point is it's not okay. They will take your license off you if you persist in doing it.
Yeah, the new statutory guidance actually has a section about what happens if you are found to be breaching the IR 35 rules. I don't know whether it's been implemented yet. I know the consultations ended, but effectively it says that the starting point will be that you might have to offer an undertaking that you'll get things right by a certain point in time. And if you don't, then obviously other action can be taken against your license.
Yeah.
So that's going to be in the updated statutory guidance as and when they're published, if they haven't been already.
Just also, I'll just add on that, you've got to consider the personal service companies. So a limited company with one single driver. There has been some recent cases about this and how that's actually considered in terms of status. But I know the Traffic Commissioner's starting position is that they can't be used either as a driver for a HGV vehicle or a PSV vehicle.
It's a bit of a mess, these sort of pseudo agencies that are out there that are effectively one or two drivers that own a limited company and then are providing their services through the agency that is their business. That being said, agencies themselves are still legal and can still be used, and the relationship between the driver and the agency is not one you need to worry about. But there are lots of issues that even arise out of that, and we all know the issues that can arise with agency drivers, not least of which the sheer number of them that run into bridges that we've been dealing with over the last 2 years. Okay, so let's move on. Were there any questions, actually?
We haven't moved any further.
People are now in a full state of depression after Joe's identifying just how hard it's going to be for the next few years in business in the UK. And we're just going to have to battle through, but we've done it before and we will do it again. But what does it matter to you? How is this going to affect the transport business? Or has anything been offered to the transport sector? And there is some breaking news, Scott.
Yeah, just so people aware, I've been banished from the office today because I'm either full of cold or COVID, who knows, because we don't have to test anymore. I'm sat at home. So forgive me if I sound a bit nasally.
Scott is a southern softie. Those of us who were born in the north of England wouldn't even consider that a cold. But, those southern softies, they battle on through.
I'd just like to say,
and we are grateful they actually turn up.
I was thinking about the business, Jonathan, and not infecting all of your staff members so that you have a bit of a problem next week. But I'll accept I'm a southern softie and it is bloody cold up north. Anyway, breaking news. A little bit of a gift, but as ever, you caveat that gift. The government have recently announced some funding for HGV driver and welfare facilities so that operators of these facilities can apply for government funding. As always, there are some devil in the detail. You have to be an existing operator of a truck stop or welfare facility on the trunk network or near to the trunk network for at least a 3-year period to apply for these welfare facilities. But if any of the listeners on the webinar today have an existing truck stop or driver welfare facility that people can use, third parties can use, it's well worth looking at this if you wish to apply for some funding to upgrade those facilities. And it includes showers, toilets, security costs, canteens and bits and pieces along those lines. So it's well worth having a look at if that's available to you or something that you're already doing and providing.
It's a grant, isn't it, Scott? It's not.
It is a grant. Yeah, it's a grant. Yeah. So
it's a really, really good idea as well, because the facilities are shocking and it's entirely unfair on our driving teams across the UK. who have to stand in the gentlemen's toilets in service stations queuing for one shower while everybody else is coming in and out on their holidays. It's just unacceptable.
It is ridiculous.
It is. All right. Well, that hopefully is some bright news, and hopefully that will make some people's lives better. Now, the next slide is perhaps unusual, but we've been asked just to state that in Ukraine, as many of you are aware, there's been a lot of bombing of the railway lines. Now, they have got a strategic plan for rebuilding their railway structure and actually making it line up with the same gauge of railway. If anybody remembers their Hornby railway tracks and the gauge, but the same gauge of railway as is used in the rest of Europe, which will make access and egress into Ukraine in years to come much easier for Europeans by train. But in the short term, they haven't got trains running in many of the areas of Ukraine because the tracks have been bombed. So they are making a plea, and I accept that this is going to be fairly isolated, but they are making a plea for, sorry, that's locked, for anybody who has any old coaches or buses that they just want rid of. Now, this would be a gift. I don't think there's any suggestion that you'd be reimbursed for it. But if you are sitting there thinking, actually, I've got a couple of old buses in the yard that I don't want, they're worthless, but I don't mind giving them to the Ukrainians so they can use them to move people, then the Associated Passenger Transport Industries Parliamentary Group, through Lord Barclay and Paul Sainthouse, are seeking to be informed of such vehicles, which they will then somehow get to Ukraine. So if you are sitting on an old vehicle and you don't want it, and it's a bus or a coach, then contact us, contact Julia. She'll give you the contact details, Paul, and then they can help you get rid of that item. But be aware, we're not, you know, pushing anyone to do this, but if you're sitting there and you've got these things available and you don't want them, then that's a good opportunity to get rid of them. No, sorry, I thought I heard something.
I thought so too.
Okay, well, thank you for that in advance, just in case somebody can help there. As we're all aware, the Ukrainians are doing remarkably well, and long may that continue. Although people do say I look a little bit like Putin, which doesn't help in many environments. Anyway, there you go. Now, let's look at some other things that are going on in the industry, in the regulatory sector. And one of the things, it's not new. Load securities and the guidance around load security has been reviewed some years ago now with the assistance of the Health and Safety Executive. And they have issued a guidance document. So if you're in the haulage sector and you've not read, seen or become aware of the DVSA/HSE guidance on load security, then go online, type it in and look it up. Always access it through the .gov website, or you can get it through our hub. Don't just go to random sites for it, because you might end up with all sorts of rubbish. You need the DVSA, HSE, Joint Guidance on Load Security. Now, why is it important? It's important for two reasons. One, there's been a review of it, and I'm not 100% sure personally the outcome of that review, but two, the enforcement strategy is being reminded and reinforced. So, in other words, the DVSA are looking again at loads, at how they're loaded, and taking action. And so, in reality, if you haven't trained your drivers on load security, if you haven't referred to the guidance, if you haven't re-reminded your drivers on load security and reviewed and checked and audited loads on vehicles to check the drivers are actually following the protocols, then you can find yourself in an inquiry because your drivers are attracting fixed penalties for load security. The XL rated trailers are still a valid explanation for a slight reduction in the expectation. But remember the rules there, they've got to be loaded end to end, and also, or have some sort of blocking system in place to stop loads moving forward and backwards if they're not loaded end to end on an XL rated trailer. Yeah. And don't assume your trailer's XL rated because somebody told you. They're very specific and they will be marked as XL rated if they're XL rated. And we've had all sorts of cases over the last 12, 18 months with regard to load security of people relying on, well, it's got all the same spec of an XL rated trailer. Well, it might have, but if it isn't XL rated, you can't take advantage of that in explanation. Now, there is, there are some counter arguments to this, not least of which the offences of insecure load have to demonstrate a likelihood of the load coming off the vehicle. And actually, just because you haven't followed the guidance doesn't mean that there's a likelihood of the load coming off. So it doesn't mean the offence is committed. However, what the DVSA are doing is issuing a fixed penalty to the driver. And the driver doesn't want to go to a magistrate's court and risk a much more serious scenario, a higher fine, and also costs which he can't recover when he can just pay the fixed penalty. So effectively, by default, drivers are admitting the offence. So you as the operator may say, well, hang on a minute, there was no chance that load was coming off for all these reasons. Well, you never get that argument. You'll be running that argument in front of a traffic commissioner. So it isn't fair. It isn't being fairly prosecuted. I mean, in reality, this should be prosecuting the operator. Not that you'd want that, but that's the only way in which you'd be able to put forward the defences. But they know that there are defences to these cases, and they know that if they prosecute operators, then they will run those defences, because we've tried to goad them into it on a number of occasions in the last few years. And they've resisted the temptation to prosecute cases against specific operators because they know we'll probably win because of the historic case law. But be aware that they are now enforcing it heavily and that they are reinforcing it and reminding everybody of these rules. So train it, use the correct guidance, and enforce it internally. That's the advice around that.
Jonathan, if I could just add on to that, some of the issues that we've had cropping up recently. So on XL rated trailers, a lot of the times I'm finding that trailers have been passed on through sale, and for whatever reason, the curtains are being painted and painted over the XL rating sticker. If the XL rating sticker is not visible, it will not be an XL rated trailer, it won't be considered as such. So you've just got to make sure that any trailers you're operating are to that standard. Second point is the traffic commissioners are aware of pressure being put on drivers to leave yards without checking the load adequately or sealed units. In particular, if certain big smiley face distributors. So if that's part of the issue and drivers are facing issues at yards where they've been told to leave, without having the opportunity to check the loads, I'd encourage you heavily to follow that up in writing with the customer and the account managers, and to be able to demonstrate that that's an issue. So that if it's ever brought before the traffic commissioner, you've got some evidence that you've tried to raise this. Finally, the last sort of point is lightly loaded pallets, particular sort of soft products, cereals being one of them. Eggs was a good one recently, double strapping of eggs, which would have been very interesting for the eggs. So I think setting down the expectation of the driver, what exactly you're expecting of their load security and what their strapping is, and monitoring them to it. Some of the good examples I've seen recently is operators asking drivers to take a photo of the load just randomly and send it through on WhatsApp. And then they've got some evidence that they're asking, you know, they're doing some spot checks on drivers. Works quite well, and the traffic commissioners do quite appreciate that. You know, it's positive evidence of you being proactive with your systems.
You're going in and out, so, Scott, for some reason, you've disappeared sound-wise suddenly.
No.
You're back
again. Oh, okay. Well, hopefully people caught that. If they didn't, I'll leave it there in case I do actually, go in and out.
I was actually getting excited, although I do think it's extraordinary that you were double strap eggs. But, you know, you've got to put forward a good example, haven't you? And don't exaggerate the methods that you're going to use, I suppose. Anybody got any other egg-based puns there? No?
Excellent.
I'm on my own.
You know what, excellent.
Well, okay, but I did get an excellent, yeah, very good. Okay, now, one of the other big things that come out of recession, and let's face it, we're going into a recession, we're going into a time of very hard financial impact, I think, on small and medium businesses particularly. And let me first of all say, I don't know how many recessions now I've been involved with as a solicitor looking after this sector, but it's certainly more than two. It's probably three, maybe four. And I remember my father in the late 80s talking about it as well. And one of the big issues that comes out of recession is people have to cut costs in business. And so you try and thin out your expenses. And one of the big weaknesses in cutting costs in business is people are tempted to cut compliance costs. And they do cut compliance costs. Let's not beat about the bush. They cut their maintenance costs. They put off repairs to the next time. They try and save money every way they can. And who can blame people for that? You can't, you know, that people are trying to survive. And it might well be that this is a very hard recession for some businesses. So as a starting point, let me say that public inquiries nearly always significantly increase through recession. In other words, the enforcement agencies don't stop enforcing. In fact, if anything, in my experience, the enforcement maintains its current levels, if not increases. They find more because obviously the cost cutting has an impact on both the condition of vehicles in the road, the way in which records are stored and kept, the way in which they're managed, and the personnel who are dealing with the process and their motivations during that process or during the hard times. And so we find a lot of public inquiries and of course financial standing becomes a major issue in those public inquiries as well, because people running out of cash due to effectively not being paid by other companies going bust. So it's a spiral. What I'm going to try and encourage here is the one thing that I don't think you should stop trying to comply with is your compliance to the regime, your safety regimes, maintenance, and tachographs and driver's hours. In other words, try and maintain your high levels of compliance, because if you get called to an inquiry and you have let that drop, then there's two reasons why the traffic commissioner will be frustrated with you. The first one is, of course, the compromising of road safety. But the second one is that they will deem you to have tried to seek a commercial advantage over people who are being compliant by cutting your compliance, by obviously cutting your costs on compliance. Now, I know what I'm saying is much easier to say than it is actually to do. I do have complete sympathy with you, but we're just going to discuss, I don't know whether we've lost Scott for good, but we
No, the feedback is actually everyone can hear Scott.
Okay.
They can.
All right. It was just us then.
It is us, I think, yeah.
So the actual process going forwards is, how are you going to be able to manage costs in your business and not impact on compliance? Now, we've got a few topics to talk around here, but the first one, I think, and I'm going to bring James Lomax in, is obviously one of the most expensive assets you've got are employees, and they do cost you a lot of money. But as many of you will have been aware over the years, getting rid of all employees, or if there's a drop in work, basically making people redundant, also has serious cost implications, or potentially has serious cost implications. So what are the key things, James, that if you're looking at leaning out your business, you need to look at with regard to this?
Yeah, so I suppose a redundancy situation, so it only occurs in three situations. There's a business closure, a workplace closure, or there's a reduced need for individuals to carry out work of a particular kind. It's how it's defined within the legislation. And so that's what you're looking at in your overall scenario. Now, an individual who's made redundant is potentially entitled to a redundancy payment, and it is an on-notice dismissal as well. So if you have somebody who's been engaged with you for 10 years, is entitled to statutory minimum notice, they get 10 weeks pay in terms of the notice pay plus a redundancy payment on top of that, which will be 10 weeks gross pay at the very minimum. And if they're over the age of 42, it might be 15 weeks pay. And so redundancy in and of itself can be extremely costly. And so what you need to do is assess the business and the needs of the business if you're in those struggles, and understand, are there any individuals that we can trim or lose that aren't actually going to cost us? Now, that can't form part of your decision making. But for example, if you have individuals who are under 2 years service, that may be a base upon which to look at terminating somebody's employment before you get into a redundancy consultation, because generally speaking, those individuals don't have the right to bring claims for unfair dismissal unless there is some form of protection, which generally is whistleblowing or some form of protected characteristic that would lead to a discrimination claim. So there are individuals there that you could look at as a basis for terminating without high cost. You've obviously got your more temporary staff. If you use agency drivers, agency workers, it's a way of cutting costs that don't cost as much. And I suppose it's also following your policies and procedures. We say this all the time when it comes to the employment sections on this, and we say it, but the prevention is better than the cure, basically. So if you have to terminate somebody's employment, the costs at the end can be extremely high. You know, it's up to a year's salary or £84,000 for an straight unfair dismissal claim. You know, if you invest in the management structure and the policies and procedures at a very early stage and you comply with those going through the process, you may reduce your drivers at times, you know, when it is difficult for you, but you're trimming the staff that you don't need. But also, if you're following your policies and procedures, it helps when it comes to a redundancy situation to actually lose those individuals that aren't as good as people that you want to keep as well. So it comes back to that old adage, you know, follow those policies and procedures, have those policies and procedures in place, and make sure the managers know about them and enforce them.
Are there any big no-nos?
Well, yes, you've got to follow. If you're making anyone redundant, you should follow a full consultation process. It's different to a disciplinary process, so the ACAS code of practice doesn't apply, but you should consider alternatives to redundancy. You know, it may be wholesale change in hours of work if you can get agreement of the workforce, or it may be changing shift patterns, whatever it may be. But as part of the consultation, you'll have to speak with everyone as a group, everyone individually, and you'll have to obviously consider those the suitable alternative employment. You've got to be careful of discrimination in how you apply your consultation and your selection criteria if it does come to a redundancy situation. It's obviously a difficult time for individuals and employees, so you've got to have sort of that understanding of that for those individuals as well.
I would say a big no-no was trying to do that on your own without serious legal and HR advice.
Absolutely. Feel free to give us a call.
Yeah, I think these processes and protocols are like walking through a minefield, and you need to walk very carefully down that road, even if the individual appears to be a relatively straightforward person to select. You've got to have a fair and reasonable selection criteria and protocol for doing that, and they may have a protected characteristic that you haven't known about or they haven't told you about. But they then raise it, and you have to suddenly start jumping through hoops. So get some seriously good advice before you just start going down that road. However, these, unfortunately, in these very hard times, are things that need to be thought about in some way, shape or form, and be prepared. You know, look ahead, plan. Obviously, don't decide who's going, but if you don't necessarily need to make redundancies, but you can plan how you're going to do it, who's going to be involved in the decision-making processes, etc. And also, you may need to budget for it as well, so be aware of that. A lot of people cut costs in their maintenance. They might cut costs in parts. They go from using genuine parts to cheap imported parts from other parts of the world. They may try and make their tyres go to 2 mil instead of 3 mil or 4 mil before replacing them. Lots of small things that they may think helps cut costs. But I think Scott had some quite good ideas on things you should look at now, perhaps, that may have a medium and long-term benefit.
Yeah, so I guess a couple of things from me and feedback that I've been seeing as I'm out and about and going to various meetings and trade association events, and something really just to touch on, is that the transport sector tends to go into recession sooner than everybody else, but also tends to come out quicker than everybody else. So certainly on the HGV side, so look at it from that aspect. Certainly a lot of the feedback I'm getting from the coach and bus sector, expecting the leisure industry to be hit, which will have an impact on the coaching sector again, unfortunately for those guys involved in that. But what can you actually do, and sensible choices that you can make? Myself and Jonathan and the others have long been banging the drum about proper risk assessments for your inspection frequencies on vehicles. All too often, we still have operators and entities that stick to a standard 4 week or 6 week inspection frequency on vehicles. And really, has that been reviewed to see if that's adequate given the nature of the work, how much mileage you're doing, the age of the vehicles, and technological advances on the vehicles these days? And could you push that out to 8, 10, 12 weeks? Certainly if the work is decreasing, the mileage is decreasing, without any real impact on compliance. You know, if you have a fully functioning driver defect system that's picking up on the random type of defects, so they're repaired on time, and inspections are for wear and tear, and your vehicles you're operating are better, you're doing less mileage, you could look to extend that inspection frequency out, which also has a knock-on impact on cost. Obviously, less downtime, less time you're inspecting it. So do that risk assessment. See if you can actually stretch that out. Obviously, notify the traffic commissioner if you are changing your inspection frequency. On your operator license, your requirement is to declare the maximum time in between inspections. So you could declare up to 12 weeks. If you have older vehicles, you could do them at 6 weeks. If you have slightly newer vehicles, you could do them at 8 weeks, for example. So have a look at that and see if there's a cost-saving benefit to it. The other thing that a real drive for me is that whilst we're looking at sort of cost saving, sometimes spending a little money has a knock-on impact on saving money in the long run. So technological advances, providing drivers with better routing for fuel efficiency. You know, there's a cost impact on that, on route planning and giving the technology out, but actually, what are you going to save on the back end in fuel? Might be something to look at. Driver defect reporting, the administration cost of dealing with paper-based defect reports still. Actually, is it worth paying for a license for a defect checking app, which reduces that burden and has that technological solution? So I would encourage you to look at what's out there for you and see if, whilst it may mean there's a cost at the start, and we started this with all the tax that we're going to be paying, actually whether spending a little money on capital and infrastructure would have the benefit in the long run of reducing cost and increasing efficiency savings, that means that compliance is still being met. And I'd ask you to look at that going down. The other thing that I'd look at is if you look, going back to sort of the COVID protocols, and we did a lot at the time about if fleets are being parked up, going to your insurer, asking for cover, that the vehicles aren't actually in use, it's just for parking, and speaking to your insurer around that can hopefully reduce some of that cost burden for you. So I guess for me, don't cut the cost, have an objective look at your business and your compliance, and what could we do that would actually impact things and make beneficial savings for us and actually put us in a better position when we ultimately come out of this, which no doubt we will, if we come back to normalities in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, and I think there's lots of good advice there. Just looking at if you have to invest, for example, in technology, that might well be something that you can set off against taxes, as we've just heard actually from Joe. So there could be savings actually that are more beneficial to you than you might imagine in actually putting in protocols that will ultimately also save you money because of Scott's ideas there. And I think one of the things that I come across quite a lot in recessions are operators, and I'm not being pious here, we are just the same, but all businesses reacting at the time to what they then have to do, instead of deciding now, okay, we're going to into a period of recession, it's highly likely workloads will drop, let's start now looking at where we can make our savings, where we can reduce our costs, where we can stop incurring additional costs. In other words, try and plan it a little bit more. And if that's not something that's within your skill set, then talk to your accountant. They may have some really good ideas as to how you can actually better facilitate the funds available to you. In other words, don't just make decisions on the hoof right into the corner. And then when you're in the corner, you find you can't get out. Plan for those decisions. Now, I'm not saying that always works. It doesn't, sadly. And I'm not saying that we do it any better than anybody else. We don't. But it definitely is better if you can do that and budget and plan and work to it and respect the decisions that you've made and why you've made them, even though some of those decisions are going to be hard, both for you and also for some members of your team. And that's the sort of way we need to look into recessions, because it looks like it's going to be quite a long, slow year, certainly at the beginning. Now, I'm not talking it down. The transport sector is unbelievably robust historically and is actually a really good indicator for the economy. So you'll be the first to start recovering. And that's another real positive. And secondly, you've been through a lot, and actually a lot worse, and you've also had some very good years in the past 2 or 3 years in the haulage sector particularly. And that should be quite positive for you and hopefully help you have the confidence to carry through. But we're just trying to give you some ideas, because the news is fairly doom and gloom on the economy going forwards, particularly with this high tax economy that we're entering at the moment. And we need to find solutions for that are going to work for you. And hopefully it isn't everybody upship their companies and move to Ireland, where the company taxation rates are ridiculously lower than ours now, nearly 10% lower. Which is obviously going to be a massive attraction for a lot of businesses. We've actually finished more or less exactly on time, which is truly remarkable. We are still delivering huge quantities of online virtual training. It's extremely popular. These are the courses coming up. I've got 2 new bridge strike cases today, so people are still hitting bridges fair and square, which is keeping Scott and I in plenty of work, and the rest of the team, actually. I bet every single member of our team has a bridge strike case, at least one on at the moment. We've got OLAP training for people who aren't actually transport managers but really want to understand the regime better, or new people into the business. 2-day transport manager refresher training that's fairly heavily booked, actually, but if you might be able to squeeze on. We've got tachograph rule changes. The last one of that course is going to be run on the 12th of December. There's a new course for next year, but if you want to talk through the changes and how you implement them in your business, that is your last chance, 12th of December. Another two-day transport manager refresher in January. We run one a month. Missing mileage training.
Back Friday special, it is. So 25% off with the code BackFriday25.
Okay, you have been told. And then a one-day OLAP. Now, I can't see lower than that on the screen, so that might be the last one. Mm. Hopefully, we'll have something much more cheerful to talk about in 2 weeks' time. I'm sure we will. We will find something.
The last
cheerful
webinar for
2020. Yeah, we might have Chloe back as well, just so it runs a bit more smoothly.
Oh, there we are.
But I don't necessarily want to sacrifice the voice. Is it the last one for 2022?
It is, in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, it's our Christmas special then. 9th of December. So those of you who've experienced our Christmas special before will enjoy it. We'll have a big team for that. We'll probably get both Chloe and Juliet in for that session so that we can have the voice.
Hands down, tech expertise.
And the smooth running. So hopefully we'll see you in a fortnight. I hope we haven't depressed you too much, but hopefully we've given you some good ideas. And we look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you very much.